This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still, I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. It's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people. Come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. We are so excited to get into today's podcast. It's the first one of the new year with a very special guest. And you know what our saying is, it's go hard or go home. We said this last week, but we're going to say this again. Happy New Year. Happy 2024. It's brilliant to have you listening. And in particular, if you have found us for the very first time, welcome. Welcome to the chaos that is Over the Influence. If you're thinking, who's this loudmouth northerner banging on about sobriety? Well, my name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I have just nailed my sixth alcohol-free Christmas and New Year. And when I say it out loud, it will just never not surprise me, because I didn't think it was possible. I didn't think I could enjoy Christmas and New Year without alcohol. I absolutely can. I never meant to be alcohol-free. I wasn't supposed to be on a sober journey, but here we are, 5 years later on, at the age of 50, absolutely loving alcohol-free life. I drank too much, too often, too quickly, decided to take a break, and it stuck. I fell in love with sobriety. That's me in a very, very long-winded nutshell. Ben, Happy New Year. How the hell are you?
Happy New Year, Shaz. Hi, I'm very well, thank you. I am Ben. I am 35. I live in Liverpool. I'm husband to Jem. I am dad to baby Leo. I'm stepdad to Alfie and Millie. And this year, I will be 4 years alcohol-free. It feels like it's getting serious now. 4 years, it's a long time, isn't it? And you know what? Best decision I ever made. I didn't intend to give up booze forever. I was going to do 3 months, mainly to kind of shut Shaz up, really, to say, look, I've tried it. It's not for me, this alcohol-free life thing. I'm just, thanks for everything, Shaz. Thanks for your advice. Thanks for your encouragement. But I'm going to go back to drinking now. But I got to 3 months and thought, oh, this feels quite good, actually. I should probably extend it to six. Oh, this feels really good. You know what? Wouldn't it be cool to say I did a whole year alcohol-free? I'll get to 12 months and then on day 366, I'll start drinking again. But I got to day 366 and went, look, I've got a year now to look back on. I've got, you know, birthdays, weddings, Christmases, everything's been thrown in there. And I like this version of me a lot better than the drinking version of me. So yeah, 4 years in July, actually. So I'm 3.5 years at the moment. And today's guest was I think a lot of people can say this, but he was a hugely influential figure in my decision to go completely alcohol free. I'm sure we'll get to things like the fading effect bias, which is just, this man says things and it just kind of implants in your brain and you can't unhear them when he says them. Shaz is one of your favourite all-time OTI guests, also friend of the show. So I'll let you do the big intro.
Thank you. Thank you. I'd just like to say at this point, I've actually put a sparkly top on because of the guest. It's been noted in the past that, oh, Sharon only gets dressed up when William Flipping Porter's on the podcast. Well, I've gone all out glitter for the new year today. I've got rouge on my cheeks. I put a bit of lippy on. William Porter, it gives us great pleasure to welcome you back to Over the Influence. Happy New Year. And how the hell are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Happy New Year to you both. Nice to see you again.
Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. I just want to echo what Ben said there. I can remember vividly, William, vividly. My first weekend away when I was about probably 2 or 3 weeks into this whole alcohol-free nonsense. And I was that desperate to do it, you know, that desperate to learn and just throw myself into this. I got your book delivered to the holiday home where we were staying because I thought, well, if I'm not drinking, I need to read something. And who's this fella, William Porter? And for me, that's where it started. So you were instrumental in helping get me to where I am today. So thank you.
My pleasure. No, not at all. Good to hear.
And before we get into chatting, there's so many people from our community watching this call. The love for William Porter on the messages, Ben. We're going to have to come back to it, I think, towards the end of the episode. You've helped a lot of people, William. So again, thank you very, very much. I know Ben wants to jump in. Because I'll just take over this entire episode.
Just to say, I've been looking back at your previous appearances on Over the Influence, William, and your first appearance was the 1st of October 2020.
Right, well, okay, yeah.
And I would have been then, so July, August, you know what? That would have been just before my 3 months. So I'm sure that episode would have helped with that decision to extend it to 6. We then had you on again in October 2022. And the last time was a year ago, the 9th of January 2022. Yes. Hang on. I got my dates wrong. You were last on a year ago. That's the point I want to make. And we talked about what happens to your body and your brain when you decide to remove alcohol and also the reasons why it doesn't feel very good at first. Now, of course, you can go back and you can listen to that episode, but we know a lot of people find us in Dry January, and also alcohol-free life in terms of a lifestyle choice in 2023, we just saw it grow and grow and grow, didn't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
William, can we start by just reminding everybody about you and your story and what brought you to here, to Over the Influence today, where you are in your alcohol-free journey, etc.?
Yeah, so I started, so I'm 47 now, and bearing in mind this is going out in January, so I'll be 48 next month, and that will also mark my 10 years sober. So I started drinking.
Amazing.
I started drinking when I was about 14, and we always, like me and my friends, would always go out to get as drunk as we could. It's just what we did when we were drinking. So I was always a binge drinker, and that kind of went on for sort of years and years and years, went through university. And the binge years were sort of getting longer and longer, as they do. You know, when you drink, you tend to drink more and more. Not many people start drinking and 10 years later find they're drinking exactly the same amount and exactly the same occasion. It's not how it works. We tend to drink more and more as time goes by. And there were a few things that I think kind of really sped up my journey, if you like. One of which was I joined the Reserve Battalion of the Parachute Regiment, served out in Iraq, which I think sort of helped things along a bit. Having, this probably sound horrible, but having children really kind of upped my drinking quite a lot as well. And then, so cut a long story short, it was 2014 and it was February the 15th, I think, and I woke up having been drinking for sort of 5 days straight. And when I say 5 days straight, I got into the habit of I would drink, fall asleep, wake up in the middle of the night, unable to get back to sleep and just start drinking again. So I was literally just drinking continuously for 5 days, and I sort of crawled out feeling, as you can imagine, pretty awful. I hadn't been into work. I'd just been ringing in sick. Wife and kids had left. I was just sort of left at home on my own. And yeah, that was the start for me. So that was me stopping in February 14. And then interestingly, I think it was March or April 15 that I first published Alcohol Explained, which is kind of interesting because it was just over a year since I stopped. Obviously, it takes a long time to write a book. So I can't remember the exact chronology, but I think I got on with it pretty sharpish after having stopped, which I think may seem odd to people to think, well, how can you be writing a book on sobriety when you didn't even have sort of a year under your belt? But I think for me, I was always kind of, for years before I'd stopped, I'd kind of been analysing my drinking and thinking, what is it actually doing for me? What are the after effects? Why do I keep reaching for a drink? And really kind of trying to dig into it. So I think at the time I reached that state in February 14, I'd kind of done so much of the background thinking about it. I was kind of, it was almost like it just gave birth to this sobriety thing. Yeah, so that's very briefly my story.
I suppose Alcohol Explained, it's not a memoir, though, is it? It's not about your experiences of giving up alcohol.
No.
It's a very factual, scientific look at what alcohol is and what alcohol does.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there are a lot of sort of biographical works out there that are really, really good, but it wasn't, for me, it kind of, I didn't necessarily see my life as particularly interesting or different to a lot of others, and I wasn't really in it to write a biography. What I wanted to do was kind of understand alcohol and how it changed from being, you know, something you almost had to force myself to drink to begin with. Because when you're a teenager and you're going out binge drinking, you get really drunk on the Friday. And I remember time and time again sitting there in the pub on a Saturday trying to drink and not being able to. And then there was kind of like an odd change. And then like years down the line, I really wanted a drink, and I wanted a drink most when I was hungover. And it kind of is like, well, hang on, what's changed here? What's changed physiologically, chemically, psychologically? And so it was really just understanding all that and putting, you know, almost trying to join the dots and understand it all.
As I mentioned, I found the book really helpful, and it was pivotal in actually understanding what alcohol did. The clue's in the title, isn't it? Alcohol Explained. But it was written in such a way that, yeah, you know, obviously you talk about the science and that, but even my puddled brain could understand it. And one thing that really sticks with me is the fact that, don't laugh at this, it's in quite big letters, but you did that for a reason, because you said that people reading it could well still be drinking, and you wanted to make it accessible to all, basically. And I was really grateful for that, because you know, it's a lot to take in at first.
Yeah, I remember sitting in the office after like yet another massive drinking session over the weekend, and like looking at stuff and getting, I think I was reading the big book online or something, and I was like, I can't read it. I need it to be much bigger and spaced out to be able to actually focus on it. So yeah.
I'm just keeping my eye on the comments, Sharon. Neil's just said, because if you are one of our OTR community members, you can watch these podcast recordings live and see all the glitz and glamour behind the scenes. It's not. It's chaos. It's Sean.
Hang on, I'm bringing the glamour today.
you are, to be fair. Neil said, I've only read one book about sobriety, Alcohol Explained. I didn't need to read any others. It's definitely helped me to nail 2.5 years alcohol free. Well done, Neil.
Oh, wow, fantastic. That's great news. Yeah, I think when I was writing it, it was almost like, so I came at it like I want to sort of explain alcohol, what it does to us and why it becomes so crucial and all the rest of it. And I remember writing it kind of thinking, this is all very well, but how is it going to help people quit? Because explaining it, this is how you got into this position, et cetera, is all very well, but how is that going to help people give up alcohol? And I think the reason it does is because when you really get under the skin of it, a lot of the supposed benefits are false. So, you know, we drink to enjoy ourselves. We can't enjoy social events without it. We can't enjoy Christmas or New Year or going on holiday without it. And when you start to really get under the skin of it, you start to understand on quite a deep level how that's completely nonsensical. And I think on the other hand as well, it brings out a lot of the downsides, because I get pulled up for saying this, but a lot of people drink through ignorance. And I'm not suggesting they're stupid. I'm using ignorance in the sense of a knowledge deficit. So alcohol does lots and lots of things, but one of the things it does is it stops the sleeping. I don't know if you've heard of Matt Walker's book, Why We Sleep.
No.
So Matt Walker is a British scientist. He's working over in California, and he's most people consider him to be the forefront researcher on sleep. And he doesn't even refer to what we go through when we've been drinking as sleep. He calls it alcohol-induced unconsciousness. Okay, so you're unconscious, but you are not sleeping. And of course, when you're sleeping, proper sleeping, going through the natural sleep cycles you need to go through, your body rejuvenates, you know, your brain rejuvenates, so many different things happen, and you wake up feeling really good. Sleep deprivation is a form of torture. You know, most people think that alcohol actually helps them sleep, but it does the complete opposite. And that's why people are always tired when they drink. You can be in bed for like 8, 10, 12 hours and you still wake up exhausted after you've been drinking. A lot of people just don't appreciate that.
I'm so jealous that you've had 14 years of good sleep.
Well, 10. Yeah.
10, sorry, 10.
You're getting William mixed up with Craig Beck, who was coming up, actually. He's 14 years, isn't he?
You started in 2010, though. Oh, God. You started in 2014. What is wrong with me in numbers today?
You'll be very hot on the numbers, yeah. Then.
What year is it? Where are we? What's my name?
2024. William Porter is next month 10 years alcohol-free.
Got you. Yes. Nearly 10 years of great sleep. Very jealous.
Although you're doing pretty well yourself now, though.
Yeah, getting there. Yeah,
but he's had a newborn, William.
Oh,
so
that's the killer, isn't it? That was one of the things that really I used to find this galling, because when we had young children, you know how desperately sleep deprived all the time. And I'd have a couple of drinks and I'd wake up and not be able to sleep. And it used to make me so angry, because I'd be thinking, I could and should be sleeping now, and I get so little opportunity to sleep. And because of those beers I've just drunk, I'm now lying here wide awake.
Yeah.
Why do we do it to ourselves?
I wouldn't trade the sleep that I've had over the last 5 and a bit years for anything. Never mind all the other benefits that we'll talk about during the course of this episode. I want to ask you, William, over the last near decade of sobriety, what sort of societal shifts and changes have you seen? Because I imagine it was very different in 2014 to how it is now. You know, I know from my own experiences that it's improving, that it's more socially acceptable, that there is more choice. there's still a lot of stigma and there's still a lot to tackle. And that's only in 5 years. What about you over the last 10?
Oh, it's been a huge change. I think so. When I wrote Alcohol Explained, it was the main thing and pretty much the only thing out there was AA, which is fine. I'm not knocking AA, but AA approached it like, are you an alcoholic? Are you physically dependent on alcohol? And that's how a lot of people would approach it. They would come at it like, do I have a problem with alcohol? If yes, quit. If no, continue and maybe try and moderate a bit. Whereas now, this is the biggest change for me anyway. Now that's not the way people approach it. People are just looking at it and thinking, is this worth doing? Am I getting more out of it than I'm putting in? And the big shift you see is, of course, you've got heavy drinkers wanting to quit, but you have, you know, people that you would think absolutely fine, people drinking one or two glasses of red wine a week, quitting drinking for exactly those reasons. It, you know, it leaves them feeling slightly anxious and out of sorts. It's spoiling their sleep. They don't feel quite as good the next day. And they're sort of looking at it and think, why am I doing this? And I think that's the big change. More and more people are looking at this and thinking, why do we do it as a society? We, you know, it's a real, really alcohol-centric society we live in. Why are we doing it to ourselves?
At this point, Sharon, I think we should say a big, hearty hello to our friends at Alcohol Change UK, because as we found out last year, Dry January is trademarked. We didn't know that, did we?
No, we didn't. They
sent us a very, very lovely email to say, guys, it's fine, but can you just let us know if you're going to use the Dry January name for any of your stuff? So, hello, Alcohol Change UK. You're a fabulous organisation. If you've never heard of them, Google them because they're brilliant. But it's interesting. I just Googled Dry January stats. Because obviously it's Dry January right now. It's the 8th of January, if you're listening to this on the day of release. Interestingly, William, the top thing that comes up, you know, when you Google and it's like the highlight of Google. Almost three quarters, 71% of people who took part in Dry January said they slept better, and 67% had more energy. I love that that's the number one thing that Google wants to tell you. The biggest benefit of Dry January, if you give up booze for a month, is better sleep and more energy. Can I ask you, are you a fan of Dry January as a concept? Because we're very honest on this podcast, and Alcohol Change UK, it's fabulous. I think the benefits of Dry January are that it gives people the chance to see what life is like without alcohol. And often, like last week on the podcast, we had lots of community members talking about how Dry January gave them their start to a kind of longer term sobriety. At the same time, the thing that I personally don't like about it is that it's 30 days, September, April, 31 days long. And you can't really feel these true benefits of being alcohol free in 31 days. Let's just take the sleep as an example. We've had this conversation before where Shaz very honestly said that she didn't sleep very well well, for months, wasn't it, Shaz?
Right, 3 months, wasn't it?
AFJ.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And William, I think you actually said yourself that you'd never heard of anything quite so bad, because
3 months,
in terms of it was coming up for 100 days, like 90 to 100 days. I felt shocking. I just felt awful, and I was actually going to go to the doctors and say, "Look, what's wrong with me?" And it was a case of, you know, my body resetting. I've been drinking for so long, and then, you know, the volumes had increased. It was a complete reset. But when my body sort of just went, "Here we go, this is it," it was like a flipping cloud lifting. But had my target then only been a dry month, I wouldn't have got to where I was supposed to be. And just might have sacked it all off and gone, "Well, this is a load of crap. Everybody's lying." But that's not the case.
It's a good point and a really difficult one to deal with, because I think if you sold it as 3 months, you probably have a lot less people taking part in it. And I think, as I said before, Sharon, that in my experience, that's the longest I've heard of people going through that real tired phrase.
Yeah.
So I think you're probably, you know, you're trying to gauge something that ideally you'd be saying to people 3 months, 6 months. But as I say, you're not going to get people doing it. So you do. So you've got to kind of draw the line somewhere. So I think my issue, I think trigenuary is a good thing. I think my issue with it is less that aspect of it. Because I think, as I say, you've got to draw a line somewhere. And I think a month is as good a time as any. And I think a significant number of people will probably find benefits in that time anyway. But I think for me, the problem with Jijanuary, it's not the concept, it's how people approach it. Okay, so ideally, and what it's supposed to be, is try sobriety and see how much better you feel. But I think the problem is a lot of people treat it almost like, "It's December, I've got loads of parties, I'm just going to go for it because I'm doing dry January." So it's almost like a license to drink as much as you want in December. And I think the other thing is, and I've seen a significant number of people do this, although I'm hoping with the change in society generally, it's dropping, but you kind of see people, and I have seen them do this where, you know, it'd be January and someone will say, "Oh, are you going out for a drink tonight?" And they'll say, "No, it's dry January." So for them, dry January is I can't drink, so I won't do anything, and I'll just sit there. Right. And surprise, they're miserable. Of course they are. You know, they don't get to go out, they don't get to do anything. And I think that all that really does is enforce the fact that, or the false belief, let me say it that way, that you need alcohol to enjoy yourself, because all they're going to do is think back on January and think, "God, that was boring." But of course it was boring. You just sat there and refused to do anything. So I think you have to approach it in the right way. You have to go out, enjoy yourself, do stuff, and see if you can't enjoy it as much, if not more, than when you were drinking.
Don't abstain, embrace is the message.
Yes.
From world famous William Porter on our podcast. It's so cool. It's so cool. can we talk about the short term benefits then? Because we know that there are people listening to this now who just need a bit of a boost, and they are planning on the 1st of Feb to be drinkers again. Can we talk about the benefits that group will experience if they make it, when they make it? God, even the language there, when they make it, as their month of enjoyment of sobriety comes to an end.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing they will definitely get is that your brain chemistry will get back to normal. Okay, so what happens when you drink alcohol, it's a sedative, but your brain tries to counter the sedating effects of it in various different ways. So it releases things like cortisol, which is a stress hormone, and adrenaline. So when the alcohol wears off, there's almost like a corresponding feeling of anxiety. So for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So whatever sedating effect you get from a drink, there's a feeling of anxiety when it wears off. And I've already dealt with the fact that it ruins your sleep. You cannot sleep properly if you're drinking alcohol. So alcohol gives you that weird mix of feeling kind of anxious and uptight, but also exhausted, because usually you feel one or the other. You know, if you're not well, you feel really tired and you want to sleep. Or if you're excited or nervous about something, you feel nervous. Alcohol gives you that heady mix of the two of them at once. So you will get rid of that. You should see your sleep improving. And for many people, they'll start waking up thinking, "Oh my God, I feel absolutely fantastic for a change." But you may not. And going back to Sharon's experience, it took 3 months for her to get through that period before getting to the end of it. The other thing that alcohol does is it speeds your heart up. Even one glass of wine, you notice difference. Your heart rate goes up. If you wear a Fitbit or one of those heart rate trackers, you've only got to look at the effect a glass of wine has on your heart rate. Now, having a high heart rate is only good if you're exercising. Okay, when you exercise, a few things happen, one of which is that your blood composition changes. So when you're fit, you have a different blood composition to when you're unfit. So when you're exercising, your muscles need more oxygen, and the oxygen gets to them by the red blood cells in the blood. So you breathe in oxygen, it goes into the red blood cells in your blood, in your lungs, and then it's pumped around your body. Now, if you're regularly exercising to get your heart rate up, you become fit. One of the things of fitness is your, as I say, your blood composition changes. The average age of the red blood cells decreases. And the reason that's important is that the younger blood cells can take more oxygen, and the concentration of oxygen in the blood cells increases. So what's happening is you're actually getting fitter. When you drink alcohol, the opposite happens, because it speeds your heart rate up, because your brain releases these stimulants to try and counter the sedating effects of the alcohol, which pushes your heart rate up. So the opposite happens, because there's too much oxygen going around. So the average age of the blood cells increases, so they carry less oxygen, and the concentration goes less and less. So that's the long-term effect. But the short-term effect is you feel very lethargic. So when you exercise, your heart rate increases, and the quicker your heart rate goes, the more you want to sit down and rest. So it's like a fail-safe mechanism. So you're just exercising and exercising until you have a heart attack. So that's a key concept to get in mind. The quicker your heart is going, the more you want to sit down and rest. Now, because alcohol increases your heart rate, you're constantly feeling more tired and more lethargic. So the other thing, and this is the other thing, obviously, you mentioned about the Google search, of people finding they have more energy. Surprise, surprise. It's because they're not taking a drug that's increasing their heart rate, that's making them want to sit down and rest all the time. So these are the things people should be starting to see even after sort of 8 days or so.
Just looking at the chat box, and hang on, where's this comment here? It was from Camilla. My very first book about alcohol was Alcohol Explained, Game Changer. Big up your bad self, Camilla. Thank you. Something James has mentioned, and I know James has joined this call from the States, which is brilliant. Talking about sleep and those improvements. He says he's curious about the impact on sleep when you moderate or have a blip during a long period. Now, I know that there's people on this call, there's people listening now, people within this community that might have racked up 30, 60, 90 days under their belt. So then for whatever reason, you know, they've had a drink and now they're not again. Does the entire body, like, go back to square one?
No, it doesn't go. So sleep's, lack of sleep's accumulative. Okay, so if you don't, like, this is what I find at the moment. I do, you know, I sleep very well. I'm not drinking, but I do occasionally have bad nights. But what I find is one bad night, I'm pretty much fine the next day. So when you have accumulative bad nights, particularly if you have children, that it starts to really grind you down and make you tired. So if, for example, I stayed up all night tonight, I wouldn't probably feel 100% tomorrow, but I wouldn't feel too awful. And probably the following night, I'd get a good night's sleep, be pretty much back to normal. But if I'd had 10 years of not sleeping, I wouldn't manage that in a single night. It would take weeks and weeks and weeks to get back to that, you know, get all the sleep I needed. So I think if you have a single blip, you're absolutely going to feel rubbish the next day. And one of the reasons is you won't have slept properly, but it's not going to take you months and months and months to get over it. You probably get over it in a day or two. So that's the key point. Lack of sleep is accumulative, and the longer you've not been sleeping for, the longer it's going to take to repair that damage. So one night, you know, as I say, you're not going to feel particularly good the next day, but it's not going to take you months and months to recover from it.
Slightly different question on that same point. Let's say that somebody does decide they're going to start drinking again on the 1st of February, and then they go, oh, you know what? I'll have another one on the 2nd because I just done a whole month without it. Oh, and it's Friday now, on the 3rd, I'll have a few more. How quickly can you kind of, like, is it almost instant? Like, if you're talking about the kind of cumulative effects of good things, consistency, but also cumulative bad things, if you decide to stop drinking for January and then you go back to drinking for February, how long does it take your body to revert to being pre-dry January you and that kind of the feeling, state of mind and body?
I think it would be pretty much immediate, to be honest, because you're going to, like I say, if you drink one night, you're not going to feel particularly good the next day because, one, you won't have slept properly, and two, you'll have all that excess kind of unpleasant stimulation feeling within you. And it's only going to get worse over time. And I think that's the problem. And again, all of this kind of feeds into this feeling of lethargy. So not sleeping makes you feel really tired and drained. The effect on your heart rate makes you feel really tired and drained. There's a similar thing. It puts your blood pressure up, which is a very similar thing to putting your heart rate up. When your blood pressure gets too high, again, your body makes you want to stop and rest. So it's pretty quick. And the problem is, this is one of the many myths about moderation, is that if you drink less, you can get the supposed good without the bad. But again, that's absolute rubbish. It's less bad, but it's still bad. Even one glass of wine, it's going to wear off, leaving that corresponding feeling of anxiety. It's going to ruin your sleep and it's going to increase your heart rate. So you're not going to feel 100% the next day. If you add on another 5 days of that, you won't have got proper sleep in 5 days. So you'll be feeling increasingly tired and lethargic throughout.
Okay. So as you can probably tell, you know what? I'm going to put my cards on the table, William. I'm going to put our OTI cards on the table. And we hope that people have found us who are doing Dry January. We want to encourage everybody who's giving this a go. Dry January 2024 is the first time that you've thought, right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to put down the booze. We want to encourage all of those people to carry on past January, past the 31st, into February, and actually into March. Sharon, we say 100 days is the magic number, don't we?
Triple figures. 100
days. Everything starts to change at 100 days, we think. Anyway.
Yeah.
But William, what are the benefits that you can only experience? I'm talking physically and mentally here, not from an experiential point of view, but from a scientific, analytical point of view. What are the benefits that you can only experience if you do this for longer?
So for me, so obviously talking about Sharon's experience, she found that she only actually really got the joy of sobriety after about 100 days. So if you're struggling,
I thought it was never coming.
Yeah,
I didn't believe anything anybody ever told me. I thought it's a crock of, you're all lying, but it's not.
So that takes a while. I personally found that my appetite, my diet, and the food I wanted to eat changed after about 3 months. I haven't got anything concrete for this, but my theory on it is when you drink alcohol, it stops you being able to absorb certain nutrients, like I think zinc and B vitamins. Okay, so you constantly got a deficit of these vitamins. You might eat loads and loads and loads of them, but the alcohol is stopping you being able to absorb them. Okay, when you are deficient in a vitamin or mineral or something that you need, a nutrient, you will feel hungrier because your body's trying to get you to eat, to get this nutrient inside you. You might eat until you're incredibly full and still feel hungry because you are missing something from your diet. That's why a balanced diet is so important to losing weight, because if you're missing something, you can't get it. And I've also heard a lot of times, apparently when you're deficient on a vitamin or mineral, you need to take it for about 3 months until you get up to sufficient amounts of it in your system again. Now, I remember this specifically. I was about 3 months sober and my kids were just starting to wean. And I was like steaming broccoli and carrots and vegetables. And it was the kind of stuff I would never have wanted to eat in a million years. And I remember just tasting a bit of broccoli and thinking, this is really nice. And so when I was drinking, I was always up for a takeaway. You know, fast food was my thing. I really enjoyed takeaways. I would always be up for one. But after about 3 months, I kind of would find, you know, I don't really fancy one. Someone would suggest I should get a takeaway tonight. And I'd be like, I don't really fancy one. So for me, that was that 3 month mark. I actually found what I wanted to eat and the amount I was eating changed dramatically.
just to disclaimer to our fabulous audience, I did not experience that same thing after giving up alcohol. But I am hoping that Diet and Fitness Explained, the recently published book, which is sitting downstairs on my bedside table by world famous William Porter, will help me more into that mindset. We shall see. I'll report back on that.
Mine wasn't broccoli. It was flipping Haribo and cheesecake. Yeah. But anyway, each to their own.
Yeah. Shaz, I hate to be boring producer here, but I know that we'd usually talk to our guest for a little bit longer. But have you seen how many questions we've got?
I know. And you know what? These are really good questions. Yeah.
They're really good.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Do you mind, William, if we just throw these at you?
Go for it.
John, thank you so much. John is one of our community members. He says, I served as a Royal Marines commando for 8 years and drinking was a huge part of my identity. How did you find your drinking after your tour? And why do you think, for all of us collectively, it's embedded in us that it's the first thing we all go to?
Yeah, so as I said, my tour jumped my drinking up massively. So when I did 2 months build-up training, and at the periods that I wasn't training, I was drinking like all day, every day. And there's a massive culture in the military of drinking, and it's almost part of that. And again, I think it's disappearing a bit these days, but it's almost like that macho thing of, you know, you're not a man unless you can drink loads. So if you're in like Royal Marines, Parachute Regiment, military generally, they put such a massive emphasis. I remember being away. It was a Saturday night and we had a march and shoot the following Sunday morning. So we were up at dawn. We were doing a 10-miler, so it's 10 miles with full kit and a weapon. And right at the end of it, you do a shooting competition. And everyone was going to the pub. And I said, I'm not going to the pub because we've got this march and shoot the next day. I'm just going to go to bed. And my sergeant absolutely ripped into me. He was like, you should not be in this regiment if you can't go out and get absolutely hammered until the early hours and then get up and do the march and shoot, blah, blah, blah. And that was just the culture. And it's just, as I say, I think it's kind of drilled into us. I always remember reading an interview with Oliver Reed. He used to refer to his drinking sessions as tests of strength. And it's almost like that, you know, it's part of show how tough you are by going out and getting absolutely hammered and then trying to get up and function the next day. It's kind of a ridiculous situation to be in because you wouldn't do it with heroin, would you? You wouldn't give someone a load of heroin and think they were weak or stupid if they couldn't get up and function the next day. But it, for me, I think it's just a cultural thing. It's absolutely ridiculous, though.
William, thank you.
And how do you change that? How do you change that, William? Is it got to come from the people at the top?
Yeah, I was speaking to someone recently who's still in and he was saying it is changing quite a lot nowadays. Okay. Yeah, obviously, I left in 2006, so it's, you know, quite a few years ago. But the thing is as well, don't forget you don't have to get sucked into it yourself at all. You can just not do it. You know, I still keep in touch with my ex-military friends and we go out and I just go and I don't drink. You know, it is absolutely your prerogative to drink or not drink. And so just do not do it.
You have the power.
Yeah,
John,
absolutely.
How cool is it that you've just asked a question directly to world famous William Porter? Claire's about to get that same buzz because she says, William, I really fear the fading effect bias. I'm currently 5 months sober. Any tips on keeping the faith with sobriety?
Fading effect bias, the thing, so for people who don't know what it is, it's a human trait whereby we look back on past events more positively than when they happened. Okay, so it's universal. So everyone in the entire planet, it's not like a Western thing or a cultural thing. Everyone does this. They look back on past events and think they were better. And it's generally considered a good thing because it helps us maintain a positive outlook on life. But of course, with alcohol and drug addiction, it really works against us because, you know, you look back on your drinking years and you forget 99% of drinking, which either you don't remember or you're just slumped in front of the sofa, semi-comatosed or feeling awful the next day. And you just remember that 1 or 2% where you really enjoyed yourself. You know, apart from the fact you would have been enjoying yourself anyway had you not been drinking, by the by, you just think back on it and think, oh, wasn't drinking fun? So the antidote for that is reality. And just you absolutely have to stick with the reality. There's a few ways of doing it. So one of the things I did was, you know, well, already described how the thing I used to hate, used to gall me, was waking up in the middle of the night unable to sleep. And just think about all the good quality sleep you're missing out on. And I didn't even do this deliberately, but when I stopped drinking, you know, I'd see like a beer or something, I really fancy it. And I think, okay, look, if you have that, you will be waking up at 3 in the morning, 4 in the morning, unable to get back to sleep. Do you want that? And it was like, you know what, I don't. And I started to see things differently. You know, I'd see people with a drink, and it's particularly like this time of year with Christmas having just gone. You know, you're constantly looking at people and, oh, that looks really nice. You've got all these, you know, fancy Christmas tables in the Marks and Spencer's food catalogue with glasses of wine on it. But I just see the downside of it. I just see, you know, people being unable to sleep that night, waking up and feeling riddled with anxiety, their heart rate through the roof and all the rest of it. So that for me is what it is. Just stick with the reality. And the other thing I think is worth really getting straight in your mind is think of drinking as having a 24-hour effect, okay? Because it does have at least a 24-hour effect. You drink the alcohol and you get 10, 15 minutes of sedation, then it wears off a corresponding feeling of anxiety. Then you have a bad night's sleep and you spend the rest of the day feeling anxious and also tired. So you've got 15 minutes, I won't even call it pleasure, but you've got 15 minutes of what you're actually after, which is that sedation, followed by 23 hours and 45 minutes of feeling rubbish. And that's only if you have one. If you start drinking more, you don't get more pleasure because you very quickly anaesthetize yourself and don't really enjoy yourself anyway. And the downside is even worse. So fading effect bias is all about concentrating on 5% of 100%. Okay, so make sure you look at the whole 100%. And also bear in mind that sedation, despite what people think, is not a pleasant feeling. You know, we start drinking usually in social occasions where we're enjoying ourselves with our friends. So when you're socializing, your brain releases endorphins, which are a naturally occurring chemical that make you feel really good. So when we start drinking, we think that the great feeling we get from alcohol, or the great feeling we feel, is from the alcohol, but it isn't. It's actually from the endorphins. If you drink alcohol on your own, no TV, no music, no radio, no nothing, just sit there and drink it on your own, it's not actually a particularly pleasant feeling. You feel slightly tunnel vision, slightly odd, and it just isn't pleasant. There's only two times in your life that alcohol will be genuinely enjoyable. One, when you're suffering from the after effects of drinking because you've got that nervous anxiety and exhaustion, and alcohol will anaesthetize both of those. Or the other time is when you're obsessing about having a drink. Like, oh, it's dry January, it's Friday, I really want to have a drink and I can't, and blah, blah, blah. So instead of enjoying yourself with whatever it is you're doing, you're actually just going through this little mental tantrum about should I, shouldn't I? So, of course, having a drink in that situation will remove that tantrum and make you feel better. And there are only two times you can actually genuinely enjoy alcohol. But both of those, the alcohol's doing nothing than removing a problem that it caused in the first place.
Just listen to that. I wanted to burst out laughing. It's just, and I want to tell you why. When you break it down like that, I'm just sitting here listening going, I've wasted like 30 years. You know, like literally been doing this nonsense for 30 years. Thank God I made the change. And, you know, for anybody listening to this now, you can make the change. Just break it down. Listen to what William's saying. Read the flipping book. Another question. In fact, this was a comment made by Annie. Hello, Annie, who's also on the call. She says, can William mention the fantastic work that he's doing supporting the January Blue Light Emergency Services and NHS Alcohol Experiment? Annie says, what does he hope to convey to people who don't know him as the sober god he is?
Great question. This is something I'm really excited about. I'm really pleased to be involved in this. So it's going out to obviously emergency services, and it's an alcohol experiment. So it's for people to sort of stop and now do a bit of a rethink about their drinking. And it's such a fantastic thing. And I'm really hoping to be able to reach out to people because, again, it's another place where there's a real heavy drinking culture. And their jobs, that having stopped drinking and knowing how much more mental energy and physical energy I've got, the thought of, for example, being a policeman or policewoman, what a, what a horrible job it is. And the thought that people are doing it hungover or drinking, and it astounds me that they're even able to do that. And it's just, again, just hoping to be able to sort of shine a bit of a light for people on their drinking and give them a bit of, hopefully, a light bulb moment to think, hang on, is this actually serving me? You know, do I deserve this after all I'm going through at my job during the day, whether it be police or NHS or whatever? These are tough and important jobs. Don't I deserve better than to feel even more exhausted and anxious the following day than I did, you know, even before going to bed?
Camila, are you ready? I'm looking at Camila on the Zoom now. The first book about alcohol-free life you ever read was Alcohol Explained by William Porter. And now we're going to ask your question to the author. How cool is that? William, when you quit for the last time, nearly 10 years ago now, I wonder if you told yourself, this is it for good, or is that just something that happened with time?
That is something that happened with time. It wasn't that I was stopping for a period to then go back to it. But when I stopped, I was in, as I said, I've been drinking for 5 days, but constantly, like I would wake up and drink myself unconscious and start again. So by the time I crawled out the other side of that, I was in quite a bad way. And all I kind of kept in my mind is, I'm not going to drink, as in immediately, I'm just not going to do it. So I wasn't even really looking ahead. I was just almost putting one foot in front of another. And I had enough knowledge to know that I would start to feel better as the alcohol wore off, as I started to sleep better and all the rest of it. But for me, so it wasn't, it's got kind of like, not trying to avoid the question, but it wasn't that I stopped just thinking I'll stop for a period and see how I go. But it was almost like I couldn't fit into my brain the thought of, right, I'm never going to drink again. It was just, this is awful. I cannot keep doing this. I'm just going to start stringing days together and have faith that I will start feeling better as time goes by.
Neil's just put in the chat box, William, I've never seen Camila looking so happy. She was nodding along and saying, I could see her, she's on mute, but she was going, yes, yeah, yeah, I agree. She was talking to you, that was awesome. Do you want to do Maria's question, Chaz? We haven't got loads of time left, but we can squeeze this in, can't we?
Yeah, we'll squeeze in one more question, then we shall have to wrap up. It goes so fast, it really flipping does. Hang on, where's Maria's question gone? Here we go. She says, are you able to explain what is happening when you black out?
Yes. So blackout. So what happens is when you sleep, so you've got two parts of your memory. You've got like a short-term memory, which is very small, and you've got a long-term memory, which is very big. So think of it like having a laptop and a, you know, a small memory disk or some memory card that you pop in the side of it. So you can store short amounts of information on the USB stick, small amounts of information on the USB stick, but lots in the hard drive. Okay, which is a different part of your brain. So what you go through with during the day all goes into the short-term memory, the USB stick. And when you sleep, it gets pushed over into the long-term memory. Okay, so sleep is crucial for memory. When you're drinking, particularly large amounts or drinking regularly, you're not transferring it over. Okay, so you wake up the next day and your USB stick, and you start putting more on it. Now, what happens when you fill up a USB stick? You stop being able to download more information to it. So either stuff gets wiped off it or the new stuff just won't get downloaded on it. So you kind of live your life with just this short-term memory going on. So this is what happens when people blackout. You can either drink an awful lot and then you don't remember it, or you can just drink regularly. So I did this as well because I was drinking a lot over like extended periods sometimes. There'd be whole days that I just didn't remember, but people didn't really think I was that drunk. But it was just because I was constantly drinking, the information was just being lost. So essentially that's what happens with blackouts.
Frightening. Mm. Absolutely frightening.
Really is.
Sorry, Ben.
What? What are you sorry
oh,
for?
Oh, sorry. just sorry
right.
for everything. I'm just really sorry. I was about to interrupt you.
I was just going to quickly say, can we just go to some of the comments? We've run out of time for questions, but before you do your big outro, your big wrap-up, Chaz, and where you gush over William and tell him how wonderful he is, just quickly, some of the comments. Neil says, this
What's
chat has
noise?
Been mind-blowing. Hannah's just ordered Alcohol Explained as a present for herself. A lovely one here. Hang on, let me scroll down. There's so many in the chat box today. A lovely one from John. He said, thank you, William. I was worried that all my adventures were over when I left the military. Little did I know that I had the best one waiting for me all along.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
Discovery.
Flipping amazing.
Love that.
Thank you.
Love that. Maria says, Mank Shaz says, awesome. And lots of other comments in there. Thank you all for leaving them. Right, Shaz, go on. Do your gushy bit.
As if I would do that, as if, before I do that, because it's the best bit. Steph has read my mind. She wants to know, what is the quote on the wall behind you, William? I was reading this in your office. Read that quote to us, because it might end up on Ben's quote board.
So this is my office, by the way. This is an Alcohol Explained endorsed quote. It says, if you do not tell the truth about yourself, you cannot tell it about other people.
Mm.
Oh,
okay.
Oh,
make sure what you will.
Corporate. Yeah. I'm not sure that one's going to make it, if you don't mind, William, to my quotes board.
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. William, you know what we think of you at Over the Influence. I've made it very, very clear that, you know, I think you're ace, you're fantastic. Your book was instrumental in my alcohol-free journey. I've said it a million times before, and I'll say it again. Thank you from the heart of my very large bottom, because I've been eating a lot over the Christmas period. Not broccoli, let me tell you, it's been quality streets. We so appreciate your time on the podcast, and there'll be so many people listening to this, you know, at the very, very start of what can be ultimately a life-changing journey. So from myself and Ben, from our community members, William Porter, Alcohol Explained, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks, everyone.